This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer at the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. When baseball legend Pete Rose finally admitted to gambling on baseball last year, he hoped it would begin a process of reconciliation that would end his lifetime ban from the game and get him into the Hall of Fame. It hasn't worked out that way. Rose's explanations were regarded by many as thin and self-serving, and tomorrow ESPN premieres a TV movie which revisits Rose's gambling addiction and downfall. Called Hustle, the film was directed by Peter Bogdanovich. It is, by all accounts, not flattering to Rose. Let's hear a clip. In this scene, Rose, played by Tom Sizemore, is at the horse track with his friend and accomplice Paul Janzen, played by Dash Myhawk.
You know, I never even placed a bet before we met.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd you manage that?
It just never occurred to me.
I don't think it's never not occurred to me. It's like when you feel that solid crack and you know you got a stand-up double. You're on a first base, you're watching that outfielder. Now it's all a matter of odds. What are the chances he's gonna make a perfect throw, you head for third base? Is he even thinking third? That's the gamble. Can you stretch a stand-up double into a triple? Can you beat the odds?
It takes a special kind of person to have that kind of confidence.
Now, you just have to be willing to be thrown out.
I spoke with Pete Rose in January when his book My Prison Without Bars was published. In the book, Rose admitted betting on baseball, described his 5-month prison term for tax evasion, and asked the world to forgive him and move on. Pete Rose is baseball's all-time hit leader and holds a host of other records. He was known for his fearless intensity and hustle on the field. Pete Rose, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Dave.
Good to have you. You know, I'm going to share with you my favorite Pete Rose memory as a player.
Okay.
It was an at-bat late in an inning. You were playing for the Phillies, and I don't remember the team you were playing against, but the situation was it was late innings. The Phillies were down several runs, and what you needed to do in that situation was get on base, not get a double, not get a triple, just find a way to get to first base, a walk, a hit batsman, anything. The pitcher makes a mistake. You're batting left-handed, I believe, throws it at your right calf. And knowing the game situation, in the split second it takes you to react, your leg doesn't move because you know that if you're hit, you're on first base. The ball whacks your leg hard, flies 30 feet away. You glare back at the pitcher, fling the bat to the side, sprint to first. That's a kind of focus that's really unique in the game. And I wanted to ask you, what do you think gives you that kind of single-minded focus on baseball when you were a player?
Well, I think the fact that my top priority playing the game of baseball was always, one, to be involved in the game, knowing the situation of the game, and two, and probably most importantly, always wanting to win the game. I think that's why you play the game of sports, especially professionally, is someone's got to win, someone's got to lose, and I always recommended winning a lot more than I did losing.
And you worked at it. I mean, you
yes.
studied every pitcher. You charted every
pitch.
Well,
yeah, you have right? to. Yeah, it's your occupation. I mean, there's only 10 pitchers. There's only 10 pitchers in your league, and there's 15 teams. So there's only 150 pitchers that you have to have written down in the back of your head. And the guys I had trouble with were rookie pitchers until I saw them once. And once I saw them, because for Dave Davies to tell me this guy's got a fastball breaking ball and a changeup doesn't mean anything until I see. Is his fastball a sinker? Is it a straight fastball? Is it a sailing fastball? Is it a riser? Or is this curveball a downer? Is it a sidewinder? And so you have to see and get firsthand experience what the guy's ball does.
You write that when there was a rain delay, other guys would be playing cards in the clubhouse. You'd find a way to get to the cage and take batting practice. You just never
Well, played. Sometimes. It's not all the time. Now, what I said, you probably read what I said, is a lot of times during rain delays nowadays because of the indoor batting cages they have underneath the stadiums. I mean, I know several times during rain delays, I was in the batting cage throwing Joe Morgan extra batting practice because he, might have been a little bit of a slump at the time. Not a lot of times with Joe Morgan, but more than twice. And then he would do the same for me. So the best time to work on your swing, Dave, is during the game if you can, and the only time you can is a rain delay, or right after the game. You know, I used to take my extra batting practice right after the game because it's fresh on my mind what I'm doing wrong, and you're still all leathered up from the game. And if you go take your shower and go home and come to the ballpark the next day, Well, one, you're going to do it so much you're going to be tired for the game. And two, you might have forgot what you were doing wrong from the time you left the ballpark the night before. So I always thought that the best time to take extra batting practice to work on a slump, if you were in one, was right after the game.
You know, I mentioned the focus because you write in the book that you now suspect you had attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. I mean, do you think that you had a different kind of mental attitude and focus? I mean,
well, I think I think I had a different mental attitude based on my upbringings. I had a defiant mother and a super, super, super aggressive father that hated to lose, and that was instilled in me and my brother and my two sisters all while we were growing up. I mean, religiously, my dad was a basketball player. I was the ball boy. I was water boy on the football team. I was bat boy on the baseball team. And I can remember his attitude when they would lose a game on the way home. He wasn't the same person. He wasn't nasty, but he just wasn't in as good a mood when he lost the game as opposed to when he won the game. Well, and if he's in a bad mood, then that would put my mom in a bad mood because she wanted to be around a positive situation.
So winning was a prerequisite to comfort and happiness. How would you react? How would you react after if you ever made a mental error or just
blew it? Well, it bothered me. It bothered me because one, physical errors are part of the game, and I always thought if you made mental errors that you were letting down the pitcher. And if I made a mental error, it would bother me more if I struck out four times, especially if we lost the game because of a mental error. Because if you understand the game and you practice the game the right way and you study the game, you should know what base to throw to, when not to get thrown out at second or get thrown out at third, you know, different things that are mental errors. And there's a lot of mental errors made every day, and it's okay to make a mental error, but once you make that mental error, you got to write that down in the back of your head and don't do it again.
I think you're right in the book. You'd be hell at home. You'd stomp around and finally have to let out a big scream sometimes.
Yeah, because my wife could actually tell, not if I struck out four times or if I got four hits, but she could tell if I made a blunder and cost us a game. Because I would take that away from the ballpark. I wouldn't take striking out four times away from the ballpark, or I wouldn't take going 4-for-4 away from the ballpark. That was part of the game. But because I just felt like when you made mental errors, you're letting people down who have families too, and those people you let down because of a mental error are usually the pitchers.
Right. The back picture of your book is you standing on first base after you finally broke Ty Cobb's record, the all-time hit record, and your hand is over your face because the tears are coming. You're thinking of your dad. Mm-hmm. But you write in the book that when you finally broke that record, you felt a letdown. I don't mean that moment, but in the days and weeks that followed, there was a letdown you felt. Describe that. Why was that?
Well, because there was such a buildup to the record. I mean, I had hundreds of writers following every move that I made. And, that's one of the most coveted records there ever was in baseball. The reason I survived as a baseball player is I always needed challenges. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
I wanted to be the first singles hitter to hit 100,000. I wanted to be the all-time hit leader. I wanted to be the all-time this guy. I wanted to play five different positions. And, you know, not right when I did it, but after I did it, always left is, what is the final number going to be? You know, I run out of challenges.
Right.
Individual challenges.
No worlds left for Pete to conquer, right?
Well, except to get my team to the World Series because I was in charge of the team. See,
right.
I was a player manager at that time in 85, and I was a player manager in 86, and I quit playing for the 87 season.
Baseball's all-time hit leader, Pete Rose. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our January interview with baseball's all-time hit leader, Pete Rose. He was banned from baseball in 1989 after an investigation into allegations he'd bet on baseball. In every major league clubhouse, the rule is posted there, Rule 21, I guess it is, that says that that gambling on baseball is the basis for a lifetime suspension. I mean, you knew the rule well. What caused you to cross the line and
well, bet on baseball? Well, I don't know if I knew the rule well. I should have, and that was my ignorance, not the... I would be surprised if you took a survey of the 750 baseball players today, how many of them would know that rule? I would really be surprised. I would, because I don't think we as players take a lot of time to read those kind of rules. Because I remember in the Cincinnati clubhouse, it was kind of a lot smaller than it is today. And I just wonder how many players really take time to read that rule.
Right, but as far back...
That don't make it right. That don't make it right. I was still wrong. I understand that. But, you know, you're right. I broke the rule.
But I mean, as far back as the 1970s, I mean, the commissioner of baseball then, he had a, you know, kind of a rule-enforcing fellow appointed who had a lot of conversations with you about suspicions that you were involved in gambling. I mean, you must have had conversations about that rule then. I can't imagine it wasn't pretty deeply impressed upon you, the you know, the seriousness.
Well, I didn't have suspicions about that rule. I had the commissioner's security guy come into Cincinnati one time, and the reason he came in because they got a tip that I owed bookmakers money. And I actually took this guy around to the two guys in question who were friends of mine, and they both concurred what we knew, that I owed them no money, and baseball was happy with that.
All right, so... So you're saying that when you did make the mistake, what you now acknowledge was a terrible mistake of betting on baseball, you weren't really aware of how serious an issue it would be?
If I got caught, yes. But, you know, I forgot the boundaries. I got out of the boundaries. I wish it could happen to change it, but I just can't change it. I had to live with it. I got it off my shoulders now. I'm happy.
When the commissioner appointed John Dowd to investigate, and Ron Peters and some other people got into legal troubles and told both the baseball commissioner's investigators and IRS investigator stories about you. You ended up being charged with tax evasion and spending 5 months in prison, which you described as being on a humiliation diet.
Well, first of all, I don't think it was tax evasion because the term is I left items off my tax return because evasion means you evade taxes. The years in question, I paid $2.2 million in taxes, and they said I owed them $2.362. Okay, so we'll get that terminology right, because tax evasion is a lot worse than leaving items off of your tax form.
So an omission, right?
Yes.
You know, of all the days you were a player, I mean, a lot of people said a lot of great things about your playing attributes, but I don't think humility was something that came to mind quickly when you talked about Pete Rose. And when you're in prison, you're stripped of your dignity. You have no control over your time, your schedule, when you can be body searched. How did you handle that?
Well, you know, that's the cards I was dealt. I'm not a whiner. I made a mistake. I mean, I underpaid my taxes by 3.5%, and that was wrong. You hear what I said? I underpaid my taxes by 3.5%.
Right.
Don't you hope we get 97% of our taxes from everybody this year?
Yeah, well, I guess their attitude probably depends on how much that adds up to. I mean, you were making a pretty substantial income at the time with baseball. And
I just told you, I owed him $162,000.
Right.
That's three appearances.
Oh, three appearances at card shows and memorabilia shows.
Yeah.
Right, okay. You know, people write books for a lot of reasons. I mean, this is your second. One of the reasons, of course, is to sell copies. But this book of yours is different, I think. I mean, there was a mission here. You wanted to tell the truth, apologize, right, and strengthen your case to return to baseball. And I'm wondering if you thought much and talked to your collaborator much about how best to, you know, well, pardon the expression, but to package this apology so that, you know, it would help you get where you want to be, which is back in baseball.
Before the people are misled here, there's only three chapters about gambling. So you got to remember, the book is about 62 years of my life. It's just not about the gambling allegations.
Right, although, I mean, a lot of it does involve some of the controversies that came from it. I mean, you know, you wrote an earlier book about baseball. I mean, it's a very different experience to have to go to prison, and I think those are told well. Probably the most quoted part of the new book in the immediate aftermath of its release was where you say that, you know, that maybe you ought to bear your feelings a lot more, but that you're just not built that way, and right, now let's move on. And that's provoked something of a reaction. What do you make of the reaction to that, Pete?
Well, some guys think I'm remorseful enough. Other guys don't think I'm remorseful enough. Now, I could have took and said I'm sorry in a different way in 10 or 12 more pages. Then I could just hear him saying how phony I am. I'm not a real remorseful type guy. The picture on the back page, it took an eight and a half minutes of a 9 minute standing ovation to make me cry. I don't go to movies and cry. I'm not a crier. I'm not a hugger. You know, my dad never hugged me and kissed me and told me he loved me. I knew he did, but I do it to my sons. I mean, I tell them I love them, I hug them, I kiss them, but I'm just not a real, I'm not a real delicate type guy. And if I was, I wouldn't have got 4,200 hits. I mean, I'm a baseball player. You know, I'm not an author. I'm not a politician. You know, I'm a baseball player, and it takes a lot for me to say I'm sorry. Dave, it's hard to put down remorse on a piece of paper. You know, it's easy for you to see me being remorseful if I'm on Charles Gibson or Bill O'Reilly or this show or that show, because you're looking at my face, you're listening to my voice. You know, you can say, Dave, I'm really sorry I've been on baseball. I wish I could change it. Or, Dave, I've been on baseball. I wish I could change it. See how that sounds? I mean, it's two different philosophies.
But on a page, it's what it is.
Yes, on a page, you have to know the person to understand it. And I can give you an illustration there. I mean, one of my best friends made some quotes, Joe Morgan, and they put his quotes in headlines. But if you read the whole quote, Joe says this and he says that. I don't show much enough remorse. And then he says, however, I haven't read the book yet or saw the Charles Gibson interview.
Right.
But that's in real small print. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all how you want to read it.
Well, another issue.
How did you read it? Let me ask you. You don't know me, but how did you read it?
Well, at times I thought you were really trying to get at what made you tick, and I thought that was really interesting.
Okay. That's good.
And I'm not sure how you apologize deeply enough to make everybody happy.
Well, that's the point. You're absolutely right there, Dave. That's the point. How can you do it? What's the fine line to make everybody happy? What's the fine line where I don't overdo it? Then the guys in the media say, what a phony-ass book that is. That's not Pete Rose getting down on his hands and knees and begging. That's not him. You understand what I'm saying?
That was
tough about writing this book, because my personality is who I am.
Maybe the mistake was the three words, let's move on.
I'm trying to move on. I'm trying to move on, but... You know, I'm sitting here talking to you.
But I guess people
took... All you're doing is relishing in the past. I'm trying to move on. Why won't anybody let me move on? All I've been hearing, Dave, for the last 14 years, George Bush even said it on Bob Costas, if Pete comes clean, give him a second chance and let him go on with his life. Well, I've come clean. Now, what's the problem now? Mm-hmm. Now everybody's finding out different things. The book came out at the wrong time, and I used the book to tell the people. That's all bull. That's all not true. It's not true.
You write that your dad was your role model and your inspiration, and he died early in your baseball career. It was a hard blow for you.
1970.
Right. Do you think if he'd lived, it would have made any differences in the life choices that you made?
Yeah, I think so, because my dad's the type of guy that if he didn't think I was associating with the right people, he'd have told me. He'd have called me off to the side and told me. And I would have listened to him, because he's the only person I've ever idolized in my life. And he had a lot of common sense. I can talk about my dad all day and all night, Dave, because, you know, we're all going to die. But I have so many fond memories of my father that I don't even think about him laying up there at the funeral home. You understand what I'm saying? Because, you know, I repaid him. He repaid me. He got to see me playing All-Star games. He got to see me playing a World Series. He got to go to spring training several years. You know, so I kind of paid him back for everything he did for me. And you know, I can never pay him back for everything that he did for me. But I kind of got even with him a little bit, but never enough. And because of that, I can talk about my dad all day and not get tears in my eyes, because I have nothing but fond and good memories of my dad.
Your son Petey made a run at a professional baseball career. In fact, I saw him once playing double-A ball in Reading, Pennsylvania.
Right.
I'm wondering what impact you think both your fame and achievements and your problems had on him and his ability to make it.
Well, that's a good question, and I appreciate you thinking about him. But, he went through hell. He went through hell for a couple years, and that's one thing that I don't like about some fans, but it wasn't majority of fans, because fans can be cruel, as you know. being in Philadelphia. Fans are good there, but they get a bad rap. But the situation there was no one knew where I was at, but they knew where he was at. And they kind of took it out on him. But I told him one time, I said, Petey, listen, you're going to go through some hell. I said, but the rewards are a lot better being Pete Rose as opposed to not being Pete Rose. And he loves his dad, and he listened to me, and he went on with his life. And he's still playing baseball. He has a dream. That's of playing the big leagues. And I'm not going to tell him, I don't care if he's 33, 34. If your dream and you believe you can make the big leagues, keep after your dream. Keep after your dream.
Pete Rose, thanks much for joining us.
Dave, thank you for being fair, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
Baseball's all-time hit leader, Pete Rose.